during a coup, which she fully supported. And I wanted people to remember who Berta was and to understand that any type of feminism that could tolerate these actions by politicians and by war criminals like Hillary Clinton is a complete contradiction of what feminism should be and is not something that protects women like Berta Cáceres. And realizing that and realizing that, you know, there is a dominant kind of feminism, I think that a lot of us have faced that sometimes tends to put forth a liberal, often white, bourgeois and analysis of what feminism is. And such a type of feminism helps, I think, to sort of reinforce the systems of oppression that so many women here and around the world are so impacted by.
You know, in addition to including the struggles of women across borders in our analysis as women who reside in the United States, I think that to practice transnational feminism is to practice moving beyond just looking at our similarities, but also confronting the differences that, you know, we may have in terms of perhaps our ideology or our practice, but still being connected through our united resistance. And so I think that also part of building a militant feminist movement here within the United States that's anti-imperialist and anti-racist also means that it's demonstrating not just against Trump, right? Because we've been having to resist since we've had to. And so we believe that, you know, through the strike, we're not just sending a message to Trump and his fascist regime, but we're also raising consciousness and encouraging people to demonstrate against the systems that allow Trump to rise. Like, our government structure here in the United States was built off of the slaughter of Native Americans and off of the enslavement and rape of, you know, Africans that were brought over here. And so this system was never set up for us. Therefore, our freedom will never be tied to the ballot box, because it's fundamentally built against us. And so, you know, while we are striking within this system that exists today, we are also telling folks that we have the ability to build a new system.
I've talked to organizers for the International Women's Strike from Thailand and Poland, and one of the things that they underscored was the responsibility that the United States holds as an imperial power to shift the global paradigm, even for grassroots movements, and how we understand feminism and the women's struggle in other parts of the world. So the question that I have is, how do you take this responsibility?
You know, it's not even just a question of being focused or sort of being overwhelmed with just what's happening in our own countries as opposed to other countries, but it's also sometimes we're very caught up in what's happening just to our own communities within the United States. And you know, I've seen, I think, some incredible examples of how feminists of different backgrounds in the US have come together to build, including this mobilization in itself, to build a militant, anti-racist, anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist feminism. And I think that that has to continue to happen, and we need to be able to build in some ways a common language and a common analysis of what our, you know, specific experiences are, and what our vision is for continuing to be militant feminists, and what is it that we're trying to achieve. And I think we need to do that here in the U.S., and we also need to do that in connection with feminist movements abroad. And I think that the three of us, in our own ways, probably do that maybe more often than the average feminist in the U.S., just from the nature of our organizing work and our jobs, etc. And the question is then, you know, when we do have a global and internationalist analysis, and what do we do with that? What does that mean for how we continue to organize in the U.S.? And also, you know, within this feminism of the 99%, I mean, for me, there still is this bigger question. From what I've seen, you know, there was this sort of this consistent message for, you know, consistent message from these women abroad, asking women in the United States to please be conscious of, you know, what U.S. policies are abroad and how it's affecting them or impacting them, whether that's through economic policies or war, etc. And if somebody were to ask sort of my opinion on whether or not I feel like that message has come through, I would say that generally I don't think that it has, but I think that this mobilization has helped it come through in a stronger way. And what I mean by that is that, you know, I just feel that outside of the United States, there is an enormous sense that this government is very much involved in the systems of oppression that exist around the world. And whereas it's very common for organizers or activists in this country, no matter, you know, the ideology or no matter what they're working on, to sometimes not consider that enough.
One thing that's been really beautiful is how we have all been able to come together despite our different, you know, ideological, political lines, and despite our different stances on different issues, and come together and mobilize already a successful demonstration just based on the conversations that are already being had, and seeing all the different, you know, schools, for example, closed down. And to be frank, I was a little worried, because there's so many different people from different backgrounds, from different organizations, people whom we in Affirm have not worked with before. Mm-hmm. But it's been really amazing to see how we've all been able to come to the table with the same understanding and the same level of respect, and, you know, giving each other the space to, you know, share freely what we're thinking and what concerns we may have, and how collectively we're willing to address them. And so, you know, after the strike, it'll really show us, particularly through the strike calculator that we are pushing on the ground, which is basically a tool for women to log in the hours that they went on strike, so that we can come up with data in order to show the effectiveness of the strike, but also our impact on disrupting the flow of capital here in the United States on our economy.
How do you respond to the critique that the strike is for women with privilege?
We're really, you know, one, shifting the conversation around what is women's labor, whether it be paid, unpaid, in the formal or informal economy, visible or invisible. I think that people are now seeing how a strike can look in a non-traditional sense. And I mean non-traditional meaning this isn't one workplace where the workers at the workplace are going on strike for certain working conditions or wages or benefits, right? But this is a strike that is, not only including people, you know, taking the day off, but really also women stopping their domestic labor, their labor in terms of caring for their families or communities. We have been able to meet people where they're at in terms of offering different ways for people to participate in the strike. So not only taking time off from work, but here in Los Angeles, we're also encouraging folks to take unity breaks where they take a break at the same time and they take a photo together holding a sign that they support the strike. Or if they're unable to take a break at the same time, doing a 1 minute stand up where they literally stand up where they're working and either begin chanting or hold up signs. We're also encouraging people to wear red in solidarity. And again, you know, by offering these different ways to participate, we're acknowledging that different people are in different vulnerable positions, right? Like some of our members in the firm are undocumented. Some of them are one paycheck away from homelessness. So we are being very intentional and mindful in trying to understand people's positionalities and where they're at in terms of the risks that they're willing to take at this moment. Obviously, our goal is to, you know, be able to like push folks in a way where, you know, we're getting people to be able to be more bold in what they're willing to do. Mm-hmm. And again, I think this strike will be a measurement of that and will really, you know, allow us to see how far we can go because freedom is just that important to us.
Yeah, I really agree fully with Ivy's response to that question. And I would also add that I think that there's a concerted effort in these media pieces to make these accusations about the privilege of the organizers and participants in this mobilization. And I think it's because people feel a little bit threatened by the politics of the Women's Strike US, which is clearly talking about you know, principles of economic justice and racial justice that are not always in ways that are not always acceptable in mainstream or liberal spaces. And I think that it has been garnering, I think as Ivy was saying, it has been garnering this, it's been building this dialogue, this discussion that's been happening in the media and outside the media about, you know, well, what is this, what do you mean by a strike? Who strikes in the U.S., right? We don't strike in the U.S. is people's immediate response to that. And I know there was a strike that was called for February 17th that ended up being, you know, visible but small. There was also a strong Day Without an Immigrant action that took place, which was also visible and strong. But the language of a strike is, you know, implying that, you know, no matter what we're doing, you know, we're trying to sort of disrupt, as you were saying before, you know, the flow of capitalism or the flow of the system. And, you know, it's exciting to see people, you know, either online or in the community, you know, really thinking deeply and seriously, well, what does it mean for us to go on strike? You know, what is our right to do that? And then also, you know, broadening their minds to think, well, if we can do this much now, then, you know, what could we do in the future, you know, to impact, you know, the systems of oppression? And I think that those discussions and that discourse is, frankly, you know, scaring, you know, the mainstream culture and the liberal culture and, you know, their response is to sort of make these concerted arguments that that this is sort of being created out of privilege you know, of a few groups and organizers and activists or NGOs, when the truth of the matter is that so many people who are involved in this are themselves working women or and coming from working class backgrounds, and also coming from immigrant backgrounds or backgrounds of experience of feeling the impact of, you know, these policies that we're confronting. And
I think that we're seeing all this pushback because, you know, we're successful. I think that if we weren't a threat, then we wouldn't be a target, right? And I think that another element to this that we, particularly we in Affirm, are seeing and experiencing directly as a transnational feminist organization, is that we're also seeing, to be frank, men within left spaces that are also criticizing this demonstration and or trying to tell us how we should achieve our own liberation. And so I think that that's still something that is critical to confront, because if we don't, then it'll continue to persist and bring us down. And so we just held our third annual International Women's Day march and rally in Los Angeles. We actually had 3,000 people come out. And I saw someone there that I knew from high school. And she was like, this is my first action ever, period. And so I think that it's, you know, really amazing that people are coming out. But I think that at this point, it's time to take it a step further and join an organization, because I truly believe that in order for us to defeat the monsters that we're facing of today, it's critical that we have an organized front with a vision, with clear goals, with escalating tactics. And I think that in order for us to have an organized movement, we need to have people who are part of organizations. And so I encourage everyone to take their activism a step further and become full-fledged members of an organization that has the vision of liberation that they also have.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio, and online at WBAI.org.
The role of media in a democratic society should be to empower people to make decisions.
WBAI, speaking truth to power for over 50 years.
You have very few powerful media outlets that are actually doing the two things that I think are the most central aims of good journalism, which is to give voice to the voiceless and hold those in power accountable.
WBAI, your community alternative.
One, two, three.
I don't need a passport to walk on this earth. Anywhere I go, cause I was made of this earth. I'm born of this earth. I breathe of this earth. And even with the pain, I believe in this earth. So I wake up every morning and I'm stepping on the floor. I wake up every morning and I'm stepping out the door. I got faith in the sky, faith in the one, faith in the people rocking underneath the sun. Cause every bit of land is a holy land, and every drop of water is a holy water. And every single child is a son or a daughter of the one earth mama and the one earth papa. So don't tell a man that he can't come here, cause he got brown eyes and a wavy kind of hair. And don't tell a woman that she can't go there, because she prays a little different to a God up there. You say you're a Christian cause God made you. You say you're a Muslim cause God made you. You say you're a Hindu and the next man a Jew. Then we all kill each other cause God told us to. Now hello, hello,
hello, hello,
bonjour, bonjour,
bonjour, bonjour,
hola, hola,
hola, hola,
konnichiwa, konnichiwa.
Bonjour,
bonjour,
bonjour, bonjour,
hola, hola,
hola, hola.
Follow
me, let me take you to the dance.
Surf Mom. And the next woman you're going to hear for International Working Women's Day is one of the hardest working women I know. It's with Winona Custo. Winona is a traditional Lakota cook who's loved and appreciated by the water protectors at Standing Rock and well beyond. She's worked tirelessly feeding everyone at the camps, and she works tirelessly also feeding her Lakota friends and relatives. I spoke with Winona at Standing Rock last fall. We did an audio interview and a video interview. And those interviews are on the WBAI Thank You Gift, Water is Life. Mini Wichoni, Earth Mom reports from Standing Rock. I really hope you like it, and I hope Winona inspires you as much as she inspires me. And FYI, my show, Morning Eclectic, is on Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. Hope to see you there. This next person is Winona Custo. She's truly one of the most amazing people I've met at camp. She's a local hero. She cooks traditional Lakota food. She ran the main kitchen sort of from the beginning of camp, the Ocheti Shekone camp, and then she switched off and did her own. Then she went back to the big mat. Inspires me so is that the woman's cooking for hundreds of people. She doesn't get flustered at all. She just told me that she says a prayer and then gets on with it, and everything always works out. So enjoy Winona. You'll see some of the foods that she makes, which are wonderful, and they taste really good too.
Hi, Thursday, September 29th, talking with Winona Custo in the kitchen at the Ocheti Shekone?
Ocheti Shekone.
Ocheti Shekone camp. Winona, you're the head cook here, yeah?
Yes, I've been here since it started, and we cook 3 meals a day here.
And how long is that? When was day one here?
Day one, I can't remember.
Okay, but it's a couple of months or 3 months or more, yeah.
Yeah.
What's the largest number of people you served in a day?
3,000.
Holy mackerel!
The line was like 3 hours long. And we had to divide it into 2 lines, but it was still 3 hours long.
And you were telling me you honor a different nation each day or night?
Yeah, there's different nations that come in every day, and so we honor them every day.
How do you do
that? They introduce themselves, and they present their tribal flag, or if it's a country, they present their flag and talk about why they're here and their support for Standing Rock and standing with Standing Rock, and we welcome them with open arms, and we have a good meal and a supper time with everybody. Yeah.
You know, the food's been really great. I've really enjoyed it, and you could tell, though, the good heart everybody has, the good feelings, which makes the food even better.
Well, in order to cook for a lot of people, you have to have that want to be able to cook for that many people, to be able to put out, and it's a lot of work. It's not easy. It's, you know, I baked bread for I don't know how many hours yesterday, and we did 26 pounds of bread. There was probably about maybe 30 buns to a pan, and it all went one meal. So, you know, there's so many people that are here, and they come from everywhere, and they bring food donations, and the other tribes bring their own traditional foods, and I've been learning to cook different traditional foods besides my own, just to accommodate all our visitors, and they leave behind a lot of the traditional foods for others that may come. So it's really good that, you know, we all bond and connect here.
Yeah, that's great. I'm just learning there's a lot of different types of fry bread.
Yep, there is.
There's fat fry bread, flat fry bread.
Fluffy fry bread. And the best fry bread, mine.
Whoa, you want a recipe then? Man, thank you. How many hours a day do you put in here?
Well, I get here at 6, and I'm out of here by about 10 o'clock at night. And it's an everyday thing, you know, you have a lot of happy people in the kitchen, and it a lot of teamwork, you know, and we put out every effort to help each other, so it worked smoothly.
Thank you so much. I mean, I keep being here. I'm seeing the generosity and kindness and the big heart of your people.
Well, we're here to, you know, feed our nations and take care of them while they're mm-hmm. here supporting Standing Rock. And, you know, we're going to just be here till the end and do our best.
Earth Mom, Ocheti Strakoni Camp for WBAI, Halloween. We're talking with Winona, who's one of the heroes of this camp. She feeds everybody, and she feeds everybody traditional food. And I asked Winona if she would talk about some of the traditional food she makes, like fried bread and buffalo stew and wojapi, my favorite. Tell us about the traditional food and why you feel it's so important to make that food for everyone here.
Well, those are our original foods that our people made, and that's a tradition passed on from generation to generation. And this is a time of prayer and ceremony, so I feel that need to make those food for the people here, so they can they can eat good and be prepared for anything, and they won't be hungry, and they can enjoy the traditional foods that I make for them. I really think that our people should learn to eat this way and stay healthy. And a lot of the people that come here to support are from cities, and they don't get that traditional food often. So me making it for the camp, I think it's really a good thing.
Yeah. I know all the native people that come really love it and really appreciate it, and the rest of us learn about it and really love it. I mean, wojapi is like a berry stew, right?
Yeah, it's boiled berries, and we thicken it like a gravy,
uh-huh.
and it's sweetened, and it's a pudding.
Mm.
And that's just the way that we make it to make people. We also put the berries into pemmican, dried meat, mm-hmm. with buffalo fat.
Mm.
Yeah, so we do that too. That's another ceremonial food. But, you know, that's a very important part of our diet.
And I see you have all the dried corn here.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, as the fall comes, I'm drying corn, squash, and buffalo meat.
Mm-hmm.
And we dry it because it preserves in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And we're able to make soup out of it.
It's good. It's good. When you dry, like, I know the corn's all being dried outside, do you sometimes use a dehydrator or just basically?
No, I dry it naturally.
Nice.
I've always dried my foods and naturally, and I store them in airtight containers once they're dry.
Cool. What's your favorite?
Bapa soup. It's dried buffalo meat with the dried turnips hanging here.
Oh, those turnips?
Yeah, and dried turnips and the corn and the squash. So that's my favorite, with onions.
Oh, that sounds yummy.
Hi.
Can we get some soup?
You know what?
Okay.
I'm just now making soup. I just served lunch. I served wild rice and buffalo meat with mushrooms over fry bread.
Wow. Mm. I know, but, we heard that.
But I do have some fry bread here.
That was Winona Costo. And you can hear from the interview, she's always giving, always caring, and always helpful. And now here's a song about the pipeline from a singer-songwriter named Cobblestone. It was recorded at camp. Enjoy.
A little song with a melody borrowed from Mr. Jesse Winchester. Oh my, you might be a pretty pipe, but you favor a pipe I once knew. That split at the seams and ruptured the dreams of some people who feel just like you. Oh yes, indeed, you're a pretty pipe, shiny and brand spanking new. But your reason for being defies the science we're seeing. You're built for the corporate few. It's the brand new Balkan pipeline, we the people don't want it here. talking pipeline. We want solar, wind, and clean air. Well, they'll say that this pipe is to serve you, but they're lying about alternate ways. They're trading the future for money, 'cause old power still wants you to pay. It's the brand new Balkan pipeline. We the people don't want it here. No new Balkan pipeline. We want solar, wind, and clean air. When they leave after making their money, and that rusty old pipe is still there. Water is tainted, the soil is toxic, and your children have no more clean air. It's the brand new Balkan pipeline. We the people don't want it here. No new Balkan pipeline. We want solar, wind, and clean air. It's the brand new Balkan pipeline. We the people don't want it here. No new Balkan pipeline. We want solar, wind, and clean air.
Yay!
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and all the best, Earth Mom.
Once you knew for sure, now you're walking in the shore to wonder. The more you learn, the less you know. The more you move, the more you go to nowhere. Ask a bird as she flies by just where she's at, and she says where the wind blows. Ask her by that what she means, she says she doesn't know. But as she flew away, she seemed to say the wind.
Bonnie Raitt, and you're listening to WBAI FM, my kind of radio. Don't change that dial.
Today on Wings.
Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up. Don't underestimate our persistence. Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. We got a way to go before we're free. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. We're sisters of the joy of resistance. No hope. nation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
This is the Joy of Resistance, multicultural feminist radio at WBAI. My name is Fran Luck, and welcome to the Resistance Show.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Joy of Resistance is a regular women's program on community radio WBAI in New York City. The January 8, 2017 show highlighted resistance to a looming U.S. presidential inauguration. Here's executive producer Fran Luck.
Well, with the Trump administration less than 2 weeks away, women and many other people are getting into full resistance mode. Why are they resisting? Well, most of you know, there are plans to take away the rights that people have fought for decades, for generations. Women stand to lose the right of legal abortion, affordable birth control, entitlements that we as the poorest segment depend on, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, our health care, a climate of hate where racists and misogynists are feeling free to act out with thousands of incidents already reported, the very real possibility of fascism. So we are going to be talking tonight about some major resistances that are coming up around the inauguration. The first one is the Women's March on Washington on January 21st with local actions in a lot of cities. The second one is the Women's Strike, called by National Women's Liberation for January 20th and 21st. And the third one is the campaign of Refuse Fascism, which actually wants to try to stop Trump and Pence before they take the reins of power. And as a special treat, and to get us in the mood to resist, we have Judy Gorman here live in the studio, and she's going to be singing us resistance songs as we go along. Get out a paper, a pencil, a pen, a device in which you key things in, because you're going to get information on how to plug in to the resistance that seems to be burgeoning all over the place. We are moving into our first segment, and I want to introduce to you our associate producer for this evening, Farah Diaz-Tello. Farah Diaz-Tello is a reproductive justice activist attorney. She has been the senior counsel for National Advocates for Pregnant Women, and she is currently serving with the self-induced abortion legal team. Good evening, Farah.
Hi, glad to be here.
Tell us about the Women's March on Washington.
Absolutely. So I don't need to tell you that our president-elect has made sexist comments about women journalists who dared to question him. He's made derogatory and racist remarks about women who have participated in his own pageant. And of course, he bragged about sexually assaulting women and accuses victims of lying when they came forward. This has been a call to action for millions. To quote Kira Johnson, the executive director of Unite for Reproductive and Gender Equity, we're always asking when people are going to be moved to take to the streets. Well, it's happening now. We're very fortunate to have a special guest today. We have Teresa Shook joining us on the line from Hawaii. Teresa is the one who started it all, who created the initial group that went viral on Facebook. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you very much.
So, first of all, how did this get started, and did you ever expect that it could become this big?
I never expected it. I hoped so in my heart of hearts, but I'm just overwhelmed and overjoyed that it actually came to be.
Now, we've heard criticism from the right that people protesting Trump's election should get over it, or worse, that protests aren't productive. What's this march trying to accomplish?
Actually, we're not calling it a protest, although everyone is free to march for their own personal reasons. So one of our hashtags is hashtag Why I March, because it's an inclusive march in solidarity, standing up to protect the rights we have because of the rhetoric of this administration, of the election process. We saw the bigotry and the hatred and the denigration of women and people of color And so we're standing in solidarity to show that those aren't our values, and we will not tolerate losing ground. It's us coming together to make a stand to say we're watching, we're vigilant, we're here, and we're not going to let you take those rights away.
So tell us a little bit about how it came together online, because this is really a phenomenon that is very peculiar to the digital age, and I'd love to share that with our listeners.
Okay. I'm 5 hours behind everyone, and so I got up the next day knowing that he had won, feeling really depressed and discouraged, and thinking, you know, what happened? How could this happen? And it really woke me up. Probably I was a little too apathetic before that. And so I got on this Facebook group, and I started chatting with women. And a lot of women were there saying the same thing. What happened? How can this be? This is not who we are. And so everyone is feeling helpless and hopeless. So when I feel that way, I want to do something. So then I got this idea to march, because in the past, marching has brought about change when it's in mass, when there's a lot of people. So I said, I think we should march. And it just kept scrolling by in the comments, because everyone is commenting. And I just kept saying it in different ways. We should march in D.C. and say, welcome to your first day of office. Finally, one woman said, her name was Jamie, she said, I'm in. And then I went off, created a Facebook event, made it private because we were trying to keep out trolls at that time, and went back on, said, okay, I've created it. I'm inviting some of you. You can invite friends. And went to bed with about 40 women coming, and woke up to more than 10,000 coming and 10,000 interested.
That's amazing. That is truly incredible.
It was amazing. I woke up, I'm having my coffee, I opened my Facebook, and I was flooded with messages of support and wanting to volunteer the time to help make it happen, and also thousands of friend requests, because at that point, no one could get an invitation unless they were invited.
So, Teresa, what's one thing that you would like listeners to take away about this march and why they should be a part of it?
First of all, once you show up together and your shoulders to shoulder, you feel responsible for those people that you're with, and that's what we're there for, standing up for each other. So we're responsible for one another. Take this energy home to where you live, and when Congress tries to do something you don't like, get on the phone. Send an email. It's going to be each individual's job to be vigilant.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your joining us.
My pleasure.
So, as a reminder, the march is taking place in D.C. January 21st, and you can find more information at womensmarch.com. The march will be starting at Independence Avenue and 3rd Street Southwest near the Capitol at 10 a.m. If you're coming from New York City, it's Women's March NYC. If you don't have transportation already, it may be difficult to find it, but you can march right here in New York City at Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza near Trump World Tower and the UN. You can find more information on that at womensmarchonnyc.com. So one of the issues that arose early on in the planning of this march was race. The march, at least in outward perception, was organized by a group of white women, and the initial name, the Million Women March, echoed the Million Women March in Philadelphia, which was convened by black women. Centering communities of color is key to the survival of our democracy, and nowhere is that more clear than in the results of the election. As we know, 53%, more than half of white women, voted for Trump, and this is compared to black women, 94% of whom voted for Clinton, and according to the Latino Decisions poll, 86% of Latinas voted for Clinton. Fortunately, the National Organizing Board is now comprised mostly of women of color, including Tamika Mallory, Linda Sarsour, and Carmen Perez, who are longtime racial justice and anti-police violence activists. So this Women's March echoes shifts from the last major feminist march, the 2004 March for Women's Lives, where nearly 1.2 million people came to Washington to rally for reproductive rights, health, and justice. This was at the urging of leaders of the reproductive justice movement that the name and the frame shifted from the March for Choice to the March for Women's Lives. And what made that march so successful was the key decision to take the vision and leadership of women of color seriously. So I want to share with you this voice from the 2004 march who spoke to Joy of Resistance at the time that it happened.
Billy Avery on the phone. Hi, Billy.
Yes, hi.
I'm so glad that you could join us today. What a treat. Billy Avery, for those who don't know, is a founder of the National Black Women's Health Project, now named the National Black Women's Health Imperative.
Good morning, Billy.
Good morning.
She opened one of the first reproductive rights clinics after Roe v. Wade, the Gainesville Women's Health Center, and she is a founder of the Joy of Resistance Collective. Billy Avery, how'd you like the march, which I know you helped organize? So.
It was wonderful. It was actually very, very uplifting, and it was such a good thing for all of us to be there together. Because we needed some of the isolation to be sort of broken down, and you get a perspective of yes, yes, yes. You know, it was great. I've never seen that many people, I don't think, anywhere ever. It was incredible.
Well, you were in part responsible for that, Billy.
Well,
I know you were
just
working hard.
You know, a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people. The Imperative worked very hard to get people there, and had a real triumph in that on the National Steering Committee level. It not only included the large majority organization, but it also included the National Latino Institute and the Black Women's Health Imperative.
So you just heard Billy Avery, involved in the 2004 March for Women's Lives. We'd like to hear your voices. We asked listeners to call in and tell us why you're marching, and you answered. So here are some of the women who will be marching on January 21st.
Hi, I'm Meredith Knight from Austin, Texas. I'm marching because this election was a profound shock to me, and I found myself talking a lot about engagement and then realized, hey, you know, I'm not really that engaged myself. There's just so much work to be done to better people's lives, and I grew up thinking that was the goal of government, and I think that women are primed to do that work. You know, we lead the majority of households in this country, and I think it's time we got the representation in government that we deserve. And there are just so many problems to conquer, and it's become completely obvious to me that if we want real change and politics that work for us, then we have to do it ourselves. And that's what I want. I don't want to drain the swamp. I want to flood it with new ideas and new people and new passions, and I think women are key to that. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Neela Ghoshal, and I'm calling from Nairobi, Kenya, to let you know that here in Nairobi, we are also organizing a sister march in solidarity with the Women's March on Washington. The group of us who are organizing are both progressive Americans living in Kenya, as well as Kenyans and others living here who understand that women's rights are human rights, that these rights are interconnected all around the world, and we are very concerned about the impact that changes in U.S. policy will have on reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, and other rights that affect women not just in the U.S. but all around the world, including here in Kenya. So we're going to be marching in Nairobi on January 21st to raise our voices in solidarity with the women who are marching in the U.S. and to send a clear message that this is a global struggle, and we look forward to continuing to collaborate with women in the U.S. and around the world. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Raquel, and I'm marching in Arizona because this is our time. Women need to raise their voices so girls can have choices.
Thank you to everybody who called in and shared your story. As a reminder, the march is taking place in D.C. January 21st, and you can find more information at womensmarch.com. And now I'll hand it back over to Fran.
Hey, thank you so much for that great segment, Farah Diaz-Tello.
On Wings. This is the Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio, aired on WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and surrounding states. The January 8, 2017 show highlighted resistance to a looming U.S. presidential inauguration. Here's executive producer Fran Luck.
And now we are going to have a real incredible treat. We have Judy Gorman in the studio. Judy, why don't you tell us what you were about to sing for us?
In 2004, I had the enormous privilege of singing at the March for Women's Lives, and I was asked to write the song for the march, and I stayed up all night, and this is what I wrote.
For children to be safe, they must be wanted. Women to be whole, we must be free. There are women put in prisons, prisons put in women, but our history need not be our destiny, and we won't back up, no, we won't bow down. Standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives, for women to be free. When will we be safe in our own bodies, free to give birth when and if we choose? Church and state may legislate out of fear and out of hate, but it's women, men, and children who will lose. Oh no, we won't back up, and we won't bow down. Standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives, for women to be. Our destiny, our lives hang in the balance. If we are not for women, who will be? There are women put in prisons, prisons put in women, but our history need not be our destiny. Oh no, we won't back up, and we won't bow down. Standing by the water like that tree, and ever moving like the water, so will we march for women's lives, for women to be free, for women's lives, for women to be free.
Thank you, Judy Gorman. We are so proud to have you sing that piece of history. It's really a historic song. 1.5 million people came to Washington. And we're going to outdo that on January 21st. And we're going to keep marching this time because we have to. And we're now going to move to our second segment with Stephanie Colgard, who is an organizer with National Women's Liberation. And another important major thing that is going on is a woman's strike. Stephanie, why don't you tell us about it?
Sure, definitely. Well, to start with, what we are striking for is an end to racist and sexist assaults and all forms of bigotry, reproductive freedom, full access and no coercion, national health care for all, a $15 minimum wage for all workers, no exceptions, protection and expansion of Social Security, child care free like the public schools and paid family leave, and respect. On our strike website, we have it spelled out, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. And what we are striking from is paid jobs, emotional labor, childcare, housework, cooking, fake smiles, dishes, errands, groceries, makeup, and more. So you can strike from whatever emotional burden you have in your life.
Yeah.
And right now our, you know, most short-term goal is reaching 20,000 pledges. So far we're up to over 2,000 from all over the United States. We've also gotten pledges from Canada, which is amazing. It's so great that we have so much global support for this movement. And we recommend that women strike today at womenstrike.org. So just women, singular, womenstrike.org.
Okay. Well, one of the things that really is different about this strike is that it's not just a strike against paid labor. One of the really outstanding things that's in your literature is that it is a strike against women's unpaid labor. So can you talk about why you have that emphasis?
Yes, definitely. Well, most importantly, the incoming administration is promising to cut, undermine, privatize, or eliminate every social contract, from public schools to Medicare to Social Security. And as you and your listeners are probably aware, the Senate just recently voted to repeal the ACA, which will be disastrous for everyone, especially women and working families. And the government and this administration expects the family, quote unquote, by which they mean women, to fill in the gaps and pick up the pieces. And the strike is to say, no, we won't. The strike is a warning, and our work can no longer be taken for granted.
Yeah. That's a major statement, that women pick up the slack when the government, when our government with our tax dollars stops giving us support, and we are really holding up the whole system.
Exactly, we are.
You know, Stephanie, we have a caller now.
Oh, wonderful. Excellent.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hi there. We wanted to ask you your reasons for striking. Go ahead.
My name is Jeanette. I work in an industry that, although is dominated by women, I witness and have experienced the unfair treatment in the office on a daily basis. Everything from being paid $15,000 less than a male colleague who had the same level of responsibility, same job description as me, to being sexually harassed in the office. And so I am striking for those reasons because I feel as though the emotional labor that I have to undertake at work to make people feel comfortable, fake smiles, and all sorts of things that I have to do in addition to my job, I'm tired of it. And just want to be liberated and want to do the same for my sisters in solidarity.
Cool. Thanks, Jeanette. I mean, that's just infuriating that you have to deal with this at work. So this is why we need to strike and stand up and to say no.
And this is also the first of many strikes.
Yes.
This is a kind of warning, isn't it? That
right.
Women, because we hold up the system, if we strike and really get it organized big time, we can really, really stop things in their tracks. And this, is, of course, is being organized by National Women's Liberation, which you can reach at
womensliberation.org.
So thank you so much, Stephanie, for that great report. And now we are going to move to Sansara Taylor of refusefascism.org. Sansara, are you there?
Hi, Fran. I'm glad to be with you.
So glad you are here. I understand you're in Washington, D.C. I want you to tell our audience about this rather incredible campaign that wants to get people out in the street and actually stop Trump and Pence, and tell us why you think that's necessary to do at this point and what has been going on around that action.
Yeah, so I'm here to talk about a movement that has come into being, bringing together people from a wide range of different perspectives called refusefascism.org to do exactly what you described, to stop Trump and Pence before they consolidate their hands on power. And the reason we're calling for this is Trump is a fascist. He campaigned on a platform of fascism, open boasting of sexual molestation, torturing the family members of people accused of wrongdoing, of packing Guantanamo with, quote, bad dudes, racism, Muslim registry, and crushing and destroying this space in civil society for dissent and protest. And with a fascist, you can't sit back and wait and see, and you can't even just register your opposition and continue to fight in new conditions for the next 4 years and look to the future. They have to be prevented from consolidating their hands on the reins of state power and the ability to carry out their agenda, which really will be a reign of terror on top of a reign of terror, and it will be immeasurably more difficult for people to resist if there's the space left to do that at all. And so this is a qualitative leap. We are calling for people to flood the streets of D.C. That's why I'm here, starting January 14th, and then to stay in the streets every night, night after night, growing from hundreds to thousands, from thousands to millions, to create such a mass outpouring. Staying in the streets and creating such a political crisis through our mass political resistance that this regime is prevented from consolidating its hands on the reins of the state, preventing the inauguration or preventing it from being able to be fully consolidated and actually ousting Trump and Pence.
A lot of us are very excited by this campaign. We're not sure. We think it's a long shot to stop actually the inauguration at this point. But I know you have a reasoning for why that is. Perhaps if not probable, at least possible. Can you tell us that?
Well, I think that this is actually possible. I'm not saying it's definitely not a guarantee, and it's definitely going to be a fight. The basis for doing this lies in two things that come together. One, there is such an extremeness, such a ripping up and shredding of the cohering norms of this country and this country's position in the world. It's so extreme that it is produced both deep fractures and conflicts among the rulers, and you see them fighting this out in different ways. Right now you see it with the intelligence community and the Trump regime, and they have their differences, and their profound differences. But none of that goes anywhere good without a huge upsurge from below, and then that can interact with the divisions at the top to force them to find another way to resolve things, like they're doing right now in South Korea.
Right.
And then I'm down in D.C. right now, and we're calling on everybody to flood D.C. starting January 14th, that's next Saturday, to come down to D.C. to McPherson Square for for a 4 o'clock march that goes into the night, and then night after night, night after night, day after day, we're growing and building these protests. And if people can't make it to D.C., they should organize them everywhere they are. I know there will be plans in New York City starting the 14th and growing night after night everywhere, so that by the time you have this inauguration, you have millions, literally millions and tens of millions, who are in the streets fighting to stop this. We need to do something that we've never done before. But people look back and they say, oh, if I lived in Nazi Germany, I would have stood up. I never would have gone along. Well, here it is now. And this is the moment. Our best shot to stop them is before they have power in their hands.
Sincera, I hear you loud and clear. We feel that way. Let's tell people how to plug into the many different events that are around the Refuse Fascism campaign. Go ahead.
The first I want to mention is go to the website, www.refusefascism.org. It's easy to remember because it's our mission, refusefascism.org. If you're not on the web, you can call 917-407-1286. That's 917-407-1286. We need volunteers. We need participation. We need donations. Everybody has a role to play, big or small.
Thank you so very much, Sincera and Stephanie and Farah, for being on this very important show. And thank you so much, Judy Gorman, who is about to sing us out with another resistance song.
You don't know who I am. You don't see, and I can. You don't know who I am. And I am, and I am, and I am. Turn my picture to the wall. Leave me hanging when I fall. Cross your arms each time I fall. I have a strong suspicion. In your dreams you'll hear me sing. Your sharpest words will lose their sting. I trust my intuition. You don't know who I am. You don't know, and I can. You don't know who I am, and I am, and I am, and I am.
Thanks to producer Fran Luck for audio and editing of this episode of The Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio, aired on WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and surrounding states, and streaming at WBAI.org. Find more music of Judy Gorman at cdbaby.com. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org and check our page at facebook.com/wingsradio. Special thanks to your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Lee Bana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Got a hold on me.
Hi, this is Cindy Lauper, and you're listening to WBAI.
Really got a hold on me.
Public radio. Gotta love it.
When the river takes
any load too big to carry.
Yeah!
Come to the river where the healing waters flow. There will be mountains to climb and valleys dark as the night and roads you have never.
Welcome, you're listening to WBAI Radio in New York City, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and today we're going to have a very special program. We're going to be speaking about some parts of our body, some part of our being that is so important and so valuable. We'll be looking at our eyes and speaking with John Monroe about the work of Dr. Banker. And we'll be offering you the eye exercise and nutrition set, as well as a full program of information that is going to be so helpful. So I invite you to stay tuned for this program. Stay tuned. I'll be back in a moment with John Monroe. Welcome again. You're listening to Heart of Mind. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and today I'm joined by John Monroe, who is an eye care educator with a wealth of experience, and he's going to be sharing with us how we can take steps to care for our eyes and how to prevent disability and what we can do to really nurture ourselves, nourish ourselves, and do the exercises that we need to do to maintain healthy, vibrant eyesight. And I want to say hello and welcome to John Monroe. Hello, John.
Yeah, hi, Kathy. How's it going today?
Oh, it's going well. I'm very happy to have you with me today. I think that this is such an important part of our being, and it's so wonderful that you're able to bring us an opportunity to preserve our eyesight, because, you know, this is something that slips away gradually. We don't always pay attention. We put on a pair of glasses, and before you know it, we need stronger glasses. And then it goes on, and all kinds of problems can develop based on what we put in our bodies, our food, based on different health conditions. The eyes, in many ways, are a canary to the body, because when we can catch something going wrong with our eyes, it also might give us insight into what's happening in the rest of our body. So can you tell a little bit about your experience, John, for people who don't know, about your work with Dr. Banker?
Well, I'm my title is a natural vision improvement educator. also you could call it a vision therapist. And basically, everything that we do is non-surgical, and we don't use any pharmaceutical drugs. And I met Dr. Banker back in the early 90s, probably in 1991. And in August of 93, I started working with her full-time in her clinic in Malibu, California. And it was, you know, amazing to see how people were responding to her treatments and work. And, you know, I'd never seen anything like this before. And I had heard of eye exercises, but I never really knew what they were. You know, this was before the internet, and everything was kind of word of mouth or what you would pick up off the radio. But, you know, I would see a lot of people coming to her clinic and having improvement with their eye problems, and they would tell her, you know, I went to my other ophthalmologist, and they said there wasn't anything they could do for me. And that was what was pretty amazing. To see was people actually getting help and improvement and their eyesight clearing up. They were actually seeing better again and could read the eye charts and doing really well with it. And so I just started working with her and just kept going, and it was pretty interesting. And I learned an awful lot from working with her. You know, I had like on-the-job training. I'm not a medical doctor. I never went to medical school, but I did work with her for 15 years every day in her clinic, and over time, you just pick up what she's doing. She had her own approach and way of working with eye diseases, getting people out of their glasses, and working with other problems that people have, you know, such as cancer and diabetes and, you know, losing weight and high blood pressure, and she even worked with people with MS. You know, multiple sclerosis, just muscular dystrophy, just all types of problems. And Dr. Banker was an herbologist, a nutritionalist, an acupuncturist, a general practitioner, and an MD. She was a trained cataract surgeon. So that's kind of how I got started in all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing stuff. Dr. Banker developed the self-help vision care kit for people to work with at home and improve their sight. And on the fun drive today, we have a premium that we're putting out for people. It's part of the kit, but there's enough material in here. If you're nearsighted, farsighted, or having trouble reading small print, you can work on this and see how it works, get an idea of what it is, and actually improve your sight. And it's just an amazing premium for people.
I agree. And just to illustrate this for folks, it's going to be actually four charts all together, including the Big E chart, the near vision chart, and then there's an eye exercise chart with two
right.
sides with two for nearsightedness and farsightedness. And you were saying that one of these is based on Ayurveda. One of these is based on Ayurveda. And in addition, we're actually also offering a CD with on exercise, eye exercise and nutrition with Dr. Deborah Banker. And we're going to add to it the interview with you, John, because you have so much information that you share during these interviews that we're going to be offering that as well, because there's a lot of insight and just information for people to be able to move forward to educate themselves. So it's a beautiful premium. We're asking for a pledge of $100 for that premium, and we'll give out the pledge line now. It's 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602, and you can call that pledge line, and for your $100, we will thank you with a copy of this premium, and it's called Dr. Banker and John Monroe Eye Exercise and Nutrition Set. That's Dr. Banker and John Monroe iExercise Nutrition Set. You can also find this on the website, givetowbai.org. And this is a wonderful introduction to this program because it allows you to begin to take steps right away to improve your vision. So that number again is 516-620-3602. So John Monroe, I know that you first went to Dr. Banker because you have had some problems with your own eyesight. Can you give a little explanation of what your journey was?
Yeah, 1980, I had glasses when I was a kid and growing up. And just seemed like over time, you know, the prescriptions were getting stronger and stronger. The lenses were getting thicker and thicker. And I was working for GTE at the time, a phone company down in Miami, Florida. I'm actually from Fort Lauderdale. So I'm kind of from down south there. And I was having a hard time reading addresses, you know, when I'd be driving and doing things. And got worse and worse, so I had radiokeratotomy. That was out at the time. It's a surgery that was developed in Russia to help people see better that are nearsighted. And so I had the procedure done, but it only improved my eyesight about 50%, and I still had to wear glasses. But my lenses were thinner. So, you know, I was kind of like, wow, that's kind of strange. They told me I wouldn't have to wear glasses anymore. So I went on like this for about 9 years. And after that surgery, I could actually wear contact lenses. I had an astigmatism. And people with, you know, a heavy astigmatism sometimes have trouble wearing contact lenses. But I could wear them after that. And everything seemed to be doing all right. I was going along. And then in 1989, I had a detached retina in my left eye. I woke up one morning and the visual field in my left eye was black. You know, the bottom part of the field was black and the upper part of my field I could see out of. So I didn't know what happened, so I went to the doctor, the hospital emergency room, and they said, oh, you've had a detached retina. And so I had to have retinal surgery on that eye, and, you know, it seemed to get the retina reattached. After a few months, I could start seeing out of the eye again, doing things. But then about 6 months later, I had a detachment in my other eye, my right eye. It wasn't as severe, but I still had to have surgery on it. And this is before I met Dr. Banker. So I couldn't figure out why this happened. And, you know, the doctors didn't really tell me why it happened. You know, just that it happened and what it was, and they did what they could to repair it. And a friend of mine, at this time I was living in California, in Los Angeles in 89, and a friend of mine in 1991, he introduced me to Dr. Banker, and I went out to her clinic. And it was amazing. The clinic was in a big house up in it's really Calabasas. It's right next to Malibu. It's in a real nice area. So she explained to me what had happened to my eyes and how these detachments occurred and why it happened. And it all turns out it was from having the radiokeratotomy surgery. So I did a procedure that was supposed to help me see better, get me out of my glasses. It didn't get me out of my glasses. I could see a little better, but then I had all these major eye problems develop from having that surgery, and it's called bad side effects. So from then on, I just started working with her and working on my eyes and helping people with their things and, you know, the patients that would come in. And it was just amazing to see, you know, how this worked and be part of it and help her out with her she had devices she developed, and we have those still. And also, she was working on the self-help vision care kit at the time. So we did a lot of expos and workshops. And I was booking Dr. Banker on a lot of the health talk shows around the country. She was actually doing interviews with WBAI back in 95, 96, you know, the 90s. And we just kind of progressed on from there. We've done almost 200 of these health expos around the country, including the New Life Expo there in New York City that Mark Becker puts on.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a real good job there with that. So I highly recommend that if anybody wants to check that out. And
so this is really wonderful, but unfortunately, Dr. Banker did transition. She passed away a few years back, but you have been continuing with this work and making
right.
it possible for people to help to improve their eye, their vision. So I wanted to, just to remind people, I just want to let you know that we are speaking with John Monroe, and we're offering you today Dr. Banker and John Monroe's Eye Exercise and Nutrition Set. It's a pledge of $100, and it includes four eye charts, the Big E eye chart for checking distance eyesight, the Near Vision eye chart for checking near eyesight and reading eyesight, and then you have the two-sided chart for nearsighted and farsightedness, and plus, in addition to that, you'll have two CDs, one with Dr. Banker, who will be giving you a lecture on exercise and nutrition, eye exercise and nutrition, as well as information shared by John Monroe. So you went into this with some very serious eye situations, but you were able to really work with these exercises to improve your vision. Can you tell us a little something about these charts and how people can use them to improve their vision?
Right. See, the work that we do is for all ages. We have children doing this. I think the youngest one that I can think of is 4 years old. You know, kids that are 6, 12, 15, you know, teenagers, adults, seniors, even people in their 90s have worked with this and had good results with it. And in the premium, we have the Big E eye chart. It's 11.5 inches by 17. And you take this eye chart and you have it laminated. You know, you take that to Kinko's or Staples, you know, a type office supply, and they'll laminate it for you with clear plastic. And you bring that home, and you put it up on your wall at eye level, and you need to be able to stand 20 feet away from it. And anytime you want to, you can check your distance vision with this eye chart. It's just like the Big E chart, you know, the doctor uses at the eye clinic. And then we also have the near vision chart, which is a smaller eye chart, and you hold it 14 inches in front of you, and you can check your reading vision with it. And a lot of people, they've never even seen that chart before in their whole life. They go, I go to the doctor, and he never checks my reading vision. They always just check the distance vision. So that kind of surprises people that that chart even exists. And then we have another chart that comes in the kit. And on one side, the Ayurvedic eye exercise from Tibet. And that exercise is for near and farsightedness. And it takes about 5 minutes to do it. You do it about five times, and you can do that three times a day. And then on the back of that chart, when you turn it over, there's a Tibetan eye exercise, we call it. And it's for improving your reading vision. And when you can't read small print good, that's called presbyopia. And that's what that chart is for, and it works really good. And there's also a CD that comes in the premium, and it's on eye exercises and nutrition, and it's about an hour long. And it's Dr. Banker on there talking about different eye exercises and things and nutritional things you can do to improve your eyesight and keep your eyes healthy. And then you also include a CD of the program we're doing today.
Yes, and I want to let people begin to see just how valuable the information you share is. Can you explain what is the reason for nearsightedness and farsightedness, presbyopia?
Yeah, people always kind of confuse farsightedness. You know, they think I can't read small print, I'm farsighted. And that's not the case. When you're nearsighted, you can see up close good. But when you look far away, way out in the distance, it's blurry. And that's called nearsightedness or myopia. Now, farsightedness, the symptom of that is you can see up close and read small print. When you look real far away out there, it looks clear. But something maybe 5 or 10 feet in front of you is blurry. So that's the symptom of farsightedness. And then when you have trouble reading small print, you can see 5 or 10 feet in front of you. You can see far away, but you're just having trouble with small print. That's called presbyopia. And nearsightedness and farsightedness is pretty much caused by the 6 outer eye muscles that move your eye around. And when you look up or down, left and right, turn your eyes in a circle, any direction you can move your eyes is done by the 6 outer eye muscles. And what happens is those muscles can tighten up. They're the only muscle in the body that tightens up like this, and it can hold tension. So these muscles will tighten up, they'll hold the tension, and as they tighten up, they start squeezing your eye. And as they tighten up some more and hold the tension, they're squeezing the eye more. And what happens is your eye becomes more elongated. It becomes more egg-shaped because these muscles are squeezing the eye. So when we do the eye exercises, there's also acupressure points you can work on, a lot of other things. You can release the tension in these muscles, and as you do that, they stop squeezing on the eye, and the eye can become round again. Most people are near farsighted. At one time in their life, they could see good. Most of them could see 20/20, and then they became nearsighted. It might have started in the first grade or when they were 15 years old or 20, but that's how it works, you know. And a lot of times, you know, stress and tension can cause these muscles to tighten up. Also, when people get angry, you know, anger can cause the outer eye muscles to tighten up. And when people get emotionally upset, you know, maybe a relative passes away or an animal or something major happens and you're upset about it, that can cause the outer eye muscles to tighten up. And also, the way people lift heavy weight, you know, when you're lifting weight, you shouldn't be squinting your eyes and tightening up the eye muscles. You want to have your eyes nice and relaxed. You know, if you're moving a couch or if you're unloading a truck or moving heavy stuff, you need to be careful with that. So that's kind of how near and farsightedness comes about. And near and farsighted people are prone to having astigmatism. And most doctors, you know, when you go, they'll say, well, you have an astigmatism and we can correct your lens to help you see better, but they never really tell you what it is. And that's what people always tell me. They go, yeah, my doctor just said I had an astigmatism. He never told me what it is. And when your eye is elongated, you know, it's more egg-shaped, it causes the cornea, which is the kind of the bulging clear part of the eye over the iris, and it causes the cornea to become more pointed. You know, it kind of changes the normal curvature of the cornea. And they call that an astigmatism when the cornea isn't curved properly. So by working with our eye exercises and things, as you release the tension in the outer eye muscles, the eye becomes more round, and you can actually correct the astigmatism, and the curvature of the lens kind of goes back to more normal curvature. So that's what an astigmatism is. And when people have trouble reading small print, that's called presbyopia. That's P-R-E-S-B-Y-O-P-I-A. And there's a muscle inside of the eye. It's behind the iris, the colored part of the eye and the pupil. Well, behind that, there's a lens. And the lens is about the same diameter as your iris. It's pretty big. And it the lens is in a sac, and around that sac is a muscle, and it's called the ciliary body. And there's these zonule ligaments that hold the muscle in place. And the ciliary body, what it does is when you try to bring something up and read it or look at something up close, say you make jewelry all day, you know, and you're looking up real close at it all day. Well, what happens is the ciliary muscle, the brain, will send a signal to it. And all it does is tightens the muscle up. It's sphincter muscle. It's like a rubber band. And as that muscle tightens up, what it does is it squeezes the lens. And as it squeezes on the lens bulges out. It gets thicker. It's like taking a loop and tightening it around a balloon and tightening that loop up. Your balloon's going to bulge out. So when the muscle tightens up, the lens gets thicker. When the muscle loosens up, the lens gets thinner. And that's a focusing mechanism inside your eye, and most people have never heard of that. You know, they go, nobody ever told us about this. You know, I've even talked to doctors that they know what the ciliary body is, but they didn't know it focuses on small print and stuff. And they were just amazed to hear about it. I talked to a doctor the other day, and I was telling him about that. So this is from studies and research that Dr. Banker did on eye problems and eye diseases and what's causing these things to happen and how to reverse them and improve these conditions. So there's actually exercises you can do that help loosen that muscle up and take the tension out of it. And the problem is when you stare at something, the muscle tightens up. And the whole time you're sitting there staring at it, that muscle stays tight. And over time, if you sit and read a book, you watch people when they read, they hold the book up and they're staring at it one distance from their eye. They're just sitting there staring at the book, reading it, or the computer screen, or they're making jewelry all day and they're doing real up close work, you know. What happens is the muscle tightens up and then they'll sit there and read a book for a half an hour, an hour. And that causes the muscle, it stresses out the muscle. It causes the muscle to tighten up and stiffen up over time. And then when the brain tries to squeeze that muscle, it doesn't want to tighten up properly. And then you can't read small print good. You start getting blurry vision. So there's exercises you can do to loosen that muscle up and getting it working properly again. But you have to change the way that you read and do up-close work. And what Dr. Banker learned from Chinese medicine and the Chinese eye doctors and things, what you do is every few minutes, maybe every 5 minutes, just move your head back about 3 or 4 inches. Or you can move the book out, you know, just move it out a few inches. And then you read for, say, 5 minutes. And then you stop and you move the book in. You know, you bring it back towards your eye. Maybe 3 or 4 or 5 inches. And then you read for a few minutes, and then you move your book out away from you. Same thing with the computer screen. You can move your head forward a little bit and read for a few minutes, and move your head back and read for a few minutes, move your head forward. You can also totally stop reading and just look off to the distance, like look out the window for a few minutes. And that lets that muscle relax inside of the eye. So you have to stop staring at things. I tell people this all the time, and they're just like, what? You know, and I say, yeah, that's damaging a muscle inside your eye. And the way to test this is take some heavy books, take 3 or 4 books, hold them in your right hand, hold your arm straight out, and just sit there and hold those books up for a few minutes. And you'll notice the muscles in your arms start getting sore. And it's basically the same thing that happens to the ciliary body that goes around the lens. When you stare at something too long, it can get sore. You can have soreness in your eye, and it causes the muscle to toughen up and harden up, and then it doesn't want to work properly. And then what do? You end up going and getting readers or bifocals or trifocals or progressive lenses. And Dr. Banker always said that when you use reading glasses or these other glasses to read with, after using them for 10 years or more, you can start developing cataracts and glaucoma from using these type of glasses.
Why is that?
Well, the way that happens is you get to a point where you can't read good. You know, you've been staring at all this stuff. And you go down and get some readers, you know, at the drugstore, those cheap reading glasses or bifocals. And when you put those on, you can see fine. Everything looks good. You can read it. But what happens is the brain does not move the muscle anymore to focus. You paralyze the ciliary body from moving, from wearing the glasses, because they help you see good, and the brain just doesn't try to focus with the muscle anymore. So the muscle's just sitting there. And what happens is when that muscle tightens and loosens and moves around, it secretes fluids out of the muscle, and it brings nutrition and oxygen and lubrication into your lens, which is sitting in a sac. You know, it's covered by membrane. And that's how the lens gets its oxygen, nutrition, and lubrication. It's from the muscle tightening and loosening when you're trying to focus on things. So when you stop the muscle from moving, you're not getting the normal blood oxygen and nutrition into your lens. And after, you know, I've seen people even after 6 or 8 years, you start developing cataracts from that. And also, when the muscle tightens to focus, it pulls on the Schlemm's canal. And that's a drain that lets the fluid out of your eye. Your eye is constantly making fluid inside it. It's called aqueous humor. And it drains through the drain. It's called the Schlemm's canal. And it drains into the white part of the eye, the sclera. And if you look in the mirror, look at your iris, and all the way around the iris, where the white part of the eye meets the colored part of the iris, if you look, you'll see like a fine line all the way around your iris. And that's the Schlemm's canal, and that's what lets fluid out of your eye. And when you have problems with glaucoma, you're having problems with that drain. So the muscle inside your eye, the ciliary body, when it tightens up to focus, it actually pulls on the drain and helps open it. And it also keeps the tissue pliable and healthy. And another cause of glaucoma also is you have blood vessels in the sclera, you have blood vessels in the iris, and they're around that area for the drain. So if people are having plaque and calcium, problems with blood cell clumping, there's a lot of things that clog up blood vessels, and they cut down circulation of blood to the tissue. So the tissue and the cells around the drain area, they can start dying and swelling up because they're not getting enough blood and oxygen and nutrition. So good circulation of blood is real important with your eyes. And you can get glaucoma from poor blood circulation to the eye. You can also get macular degeneration, wet or dry. Other types of retinal problems like diabetic retinopathy. There's different retinal problems people develop, but a lot of that can be caused by poor blood circulation into the retina. And it's really important that you have good blood circulation in your whole body. I mean, you have these micro blood vessels and tiny little blood vessels that are the size of a human hair in your body, your kidneys, your brain, your eyes, different parts of the body. And it's real important to have good blood flow and good circulation. So there's ways to improve all that, too. You know, we work with people with high blood pressure and artery disease and other things.
I just want to thank you very much for that introduction, John. I want to remind people that you have an opportunity now to make that phone call, 516-620-3602, and make your pledge of support for WBAI. When you make that pledge of $100, we will thank you with a copy of this set. It's the Dr. Banker and John Monroe Eye Exercise and Nutrition Set. Please make that phone call now. We are waiting for your calls. We're going to have a lot more information to share with you, but we do need to reach out to you for your support for WBAI. But this is really a magnificent opportunity for you to say, I'm going to really do what I need to do to take care of my eyesight. So many people go out and do the exercises. Some people run or walk, and they do, you might do yoga or qigong, or you might do go to the gym and work out. So there are a lot of us who take responsibility, but this is sort of a micro responsibility to have an opportunity to actually exercise the muscles in your eyes. And for that pledge of $100, you'll receive the Big EI chart, the near vision chart, the eye exercise chart, which gives you the nearsighted, farsightedness exercises. And this is where you can really do the work to exercise that muscle that was going to help keep circulation in your eyes, help you to bring nutrition to your eyes, help to drain from the eyes, and really keep your eyesight in the best of health. And I know that a lot of people do buy those glasses out of the drugstore because it just makes life so much easier. But if we begin to pay attention to what we're doing, then we can really preserve our eyesight in the long run. Again, that number is 516-620-3602. So, John, do some of these conditions also, how does this, it seems to me that the eye is eventually becoming distorted and frozen by not having this, the everything working, the muscles working, the drainage working, the oxygenation. Right. What can you tell us about how some of these other eye diseases might develop as a result of not doing this work for oneself?
Well, you know, people that are nearsighted, you know, myopia, they have an elongated eye. You know, their eye is more elongated, it's more egg-shaped. And then over time, your prescriptions can get a little stronger. You know, you go to the doctor and go, I'm not seeing so good, so it gives you a stronger prescription. So basically, you're just becoming more blind. Your problem is getting worse, your nearsightedness. And what happens, we find with people that are very nearsighted, you know, there may be a minus 5, a minus 8 diopter, that's the strength of their lenses. We've worked with people all the way up to a diopter of 20.00, very nearsighted. But we find that people that are having problems with myopia, nearsightedness, they have floaters develop, and they also can have retinal tears and retinal detachments. So if you get too nearsighted, if you're a minus 8 or higher, you're very prone to having a detached retina because the eye is more elongated, and it starts pulling on the retina, which is the inner lining of the eye. It's like a tube in a tire, and the retina is about the thickness of tissue paper, and it's clear. You can see right through the retina. You can see the blood vessels in it. But as the eye is getting more and more elongated, it's kind of pulling on the retina, and the retina can actually tear. And when it tears like that, the fluid in the eye can work its way under the retina and detach it. It's kind of like a blister. You know, the retina lifts up from the choroidals that they're attached to. The retina is attached to choroidals, which is, you know, a layer of the eye. So if your nearsightedness gets worse and you're getting stronger and stronger lenses, you need to be aware of this. And floaters are a little black speck. You might see a little hair, a little spidery-looking thing floating around in your visual field. You know, you can move your eye around and it'll move around, and that's called a floater. And what that is, on top of the retina, there's a thin coating of vitreous jelly. It's kind of like Vaseline. And then the rest of the eye is full of aqueous humor. It's kind of like egg white. But what happens is the eye is getting stretched out. It's getting more elongated. You know, it's pulling on the retina. That vitreous jelly can break loose, and it's floating around in your eye. And also, when the eye is too dehydrated, that can cause the jelly to dry up and break off and float around in the eye. So floaters and detached retinas, retinal tears, they're all a problem with being too nearsighted. And then just like with the ciliary body, the muscle around the lens in the eye you read with, you know, when you wear the reading glasses and bifocals and trifocals, you're prone to having cataracts and glaucoma. So right there is some big problems that are developed from using eyeglasses over time.
So, and you're saying that with this work, with these exercises, and we're also going to be going into nutrition, that people can actually prevent these situations, but will they also improve once they've developed? Is it possible to improve it?
Yeah, as you release the tension on the eye from the outer eye muscles, you start seeing better. Your eye is becoming more round again. It's becoming more shaped like a golf ball. And that's how your vision clears up. You're taking the tension off of the retina so you don't have the floaters developing and you're not prone to having a detached retina. So it can actually prevent these things from happening. And working with the eye exercises for the reading vision, when you get that muscle moving again and it's pumping in the fluids and nutrition to the eye, to the lens, you can actually help improve beginning stage cataracts. We work with cataracts stage 1 and 2. They go up to stage 4. Stage 3 and 4, the cataract has gotten really big in the lens, and it's harder to reverse it when it gets that big. But in beginning stages or stage 1 and 2 cataracts, you can improve those. In the glaucoma, you can help improve and prevent that from doing the eye exercises for the reading vision. So it actually helps prevent these problems. All the problems people have, half of them could be prevented. You know, it's all about prevention is what we're trying to do here. Mm-hmm. We're trying to keep you out of these problems, and if you're already having them, we can help you with improving them.
Excellent. So, once again, I want to remind people to please make those phone calls, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, and we're asking you to make that pledge of support for WBAI. It's only a $100 pledge, and we thank you with a copy of this. Well, actually, it's a set, Dr. Banker and John Monroe, Eye Exercise and Nutrition Set. Remember, you can make that pledge of $100 using your cards, be it debit or credit card, and you'll be able to use any of the regular cards when you call that number, 516-620-3602. You can also ask for an invoice and send a check or money order down the line if that works better for you. And we can also offer you an opportunity to pledge and pay your pledge in installments. All that information will be available to you when you call that number, 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. And you are getting this very powerful premium that you can begin to make a difference with your eyesight. Maybe it is that you have young people or children in your family who are wearing glasses, and this is something, these are exercises that they can start to work with to begin to make a difference in their entire life, really, by being able to integrate these exercises into their routines. You yourself, if you are someone who is fatigued, if you have noticed that your eyesight is getting worse and getting worse, you can see something. If you're noticing that you keep magnifying the view on your computer because your eyes are becoming more and more strained, well, maybe it's time to stop magnifying the view and start healing your eyes. And we're offering you an opportunity to do this. I certainly would be devastated if I neglected my eyes to the point that I really began to lose my eyesight. So this is your chance to be proactive for your health and for the health of your eyes, to preserve and protect your vision. 516-620-3602 is your number to call, and you can make that pledge of $100. We'll thank you with this set, the eye exercise and nutrition set. Dr. Banker and John Monroe's eye exercise and nutrition set. And with that set, you will receive the eye charts, as we've described, as well as the eye exercise and nutrition with Dr. Deborah Banker, and that's a CD, along with the CD of John Monroe's interview. When you call that number, 516-620-3602. And, you know, it's one of those things where people so often neglect themselves until it's too late. And this happens in all areas of life. And I would love for you, John, to begin to speak to the relationship of one's state of their vision and the relationship of their overall health.
Well, when you have eye problems, it's kind of a drag. You know, it's not any fun. It can maybe cause some depression. But there is hope. You know, if you look out there, there's a lot of things changing. You know, holistic medicine. We always call this holistic ophthalmology. And it's good to know that there are things you can do to improve these conditions. You know, it gives people hope. And how to prevent these things from happening. When you can just do, even if you have no glasses, you can see fine. You can still do these eye exercises and work with this and learn about this and prevent even having to go into glasses. And, you know, I see so many little kids wearing glasses. You know, it's amazing. And I know where they're headed. So, you know, your eyesight, it's hard to do things without it. I mean, just close your eyes and try walking around or doing something for 10 minutes, and you'll see what it's like. So it's good to learn about this and be aware of this and empower yourself and educate yourself, because there's a lot of things you can do. You know, there's other vision improvement products out there, but Dr. Banker has 20 years of research and study and development and putting this together and working with clients in her clinic. And it's a great kit. It's one of the best kits out there on the market. If you compare it to the other ones, it's way more information and comprehensive material. And it's just, you know, it's just the cream of the crop.
Yeah, and I do want to encourage you to make that phone call. We're heading towards the top of the hour, and we are going to really focus on asking you to make that pledge of support, 516-620-3602. We're still going to go into the nutrition piece, and this is a key part of what you can do to improve your eyesight as well as to improve your overall health. And that is really the comprehensive nature of this offer that we're giving you today. 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. It's a pledge of $100, and that $100 does help to support WBAI. And of course, we all know how valuable and how important it is to have this resource in our current, well, always, but even now, I think even more so, we can see that we need WBAI for many reasons: the health programs, the political programs, the spiritual programs, the arts programs. It's all about having a full and healthy life. But also, we're giving you an opportunity to be active within your life, to be empowered within your life. And this is something that is very, very powerful, because our vision is a part of our capacity that we want to protect and preserve if we can. Things happen, but if you have your eyesight and you value it, this is an opportunity for you to protect and to ensure that you can go on for many years with really good vision, and also to really just protect those delicate elements of your eyesight. It's amazing when we hear from John Monroe about all the different facets of the eye and how they work and how the muscles work together with the iris and how it helps to keep your eyes healthy if this muscle is healthy. What is the muscle called again? Axillary?
Yeah. The rectus muscles, the inferior and oblique muscles. They're the outer eye muscles. Then you have the ciliary body, the muscle inside the eye around the lens.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always good to help support WBAI. They bring you a lot of good programming. And they work real hard doing this for everybody. And
yeah.
I think it's good to help you guys out.
It's
the word out.
I appreciate that, John. And I know that you have been a great supporter and presence on WBAI for quite some time. And I appreciate it because this is such valuable information. We want to bring people information that's going to help and empower as well as heal. And to be able to heal the vision and the eyesight as a way of caring for the self is a beautiful thing. This is a wonderful premium. It's only a $100 pledge when you call that number 516-620-3602. You will receive the exercise charts, and also the two charts that are just for checking. So how do you go about using these charts, John, the Big E chart and the Near Vision chart to sort of mark your passage or mark your progress? How does that work?
Well, on the Big E chart, the E's on the top, it's real big. And then if you go down to the very bottom line on the I chart, that's your 2020 line. So what happens is, you might be able to read the 2040 line from 20 feet away. And as you work with the eye exercises slowly, you start reading the 2030 line. And eventually you're at the 2025 line. Before you know it, you're reading the 2020 line. That's how you see the improvement. The chart just starts clearing up, and everything you look at starts clearing up. You can look out the window and see things across the street you couldn't see before.
Mm-hmm.
And with the near vision card, it's pretty much the same thing. It has a big 95 on top, and then as you read the lines down to the bottom line, that's the 2020 line, and the lines just start clearing up. You can see them better. You can read your book better. You know, when you look at things up close, they look clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And were you thinking of having call-ins today or trying that or?
Well, we could do that. I'm trying to get these calls to our call center, and I need to reach a goal for each hour. The number is 516-620-3602, so we would ask you to make that phone call and make your pledge of $100 to support WBAI, and we can thank you with this chart. Really, I need for you to make that pledge of support. The pledge line, 516-620-3602. And we invite you to stand up for your vision, stand up for your health. Because when you're doing these exercises, it's going to be a way for you to enrich your life, to enrich yourself, to enrich your vision. Let's see if we can offer some assistance. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
I am quite interested. I just wanted to make sure I'm calling now, and I'm not aware of all that is involved. So could you please go over that one more time, and I'll make my donation understanding what it is that I'm supposed to receive?
Yes, we'll do that. Thank you very much for calling. It is an eye exercise and nutrition set.
I'm supposed to receive.
Oh, please turn off your radio, or I'll pull it down until we see. It's an eye exercise and nutrition set, which includes the four eye charts, the Big E eye chart for checking distance eyesight, the one near vision eye chart for checking near eyesight and reading eyesight, And then you have the exercises, the Ayurvedic, the Asian exercises for nearsightedness and farsightedness. So you could actually work through and make progress by using these exercise charts. And in addition to that, we have the eye exercise and nutrition CD recorded by Dr. Banker, and a second CD with the information being shared with John Monroe on today's program. So that would be two CDs and the four exercise charts. We would thank you with that for your gift of $100 when you call that number, 516-620-3602. Hello,
thank
you there?
You.
You're welcome.
I just called a second ago, and the person that was receiving the call, that was receiving the donation, asked me what type of program it was. So I just want to make sure that you guys are connected so that I am able to receive the product. So what is it called again?
It's called Dr. Banker and John Monroe Eye Exercise Nutrition Set. So it's an eye exercise and nutrition set. Dr. Banker, John Monroe, eye exercise and nutrition set. So that may be folks are calling in and are not connecting with the name. Thank you so much for calling. I appreciate that.
Blessings.
Bye-bye now. Okay, well, that's good. That gives us a chance to continue. It looks like we have another call coming through. Hello, you're on the air. What is your question, please?
I was listening, and I do have floaters. Is there any way to reduce or get rid of floaters?
Oh, yeah. Are you nearsighted? Do you wear glasses to see far away?
Yes, I am nearsighted, very mild.
All right. And you've probably been wearing them for a while.
Childhood.
Yeah. Well, the floaters, one good thing you can do is rehydrating the eye more, you know, drinking more fluids like tea and juices and water. But alcohol dehydrates the eye a lot. It dehydrates your body. So I don't know if you drink a lot. But alcohol and cigarettes, sugar, tannic acid and teas and coffee, they can have an effect on the eye. The eye is very sensitive. So your diet has a part to do with it. And working with the eye exercises and improving your eyesight and reducing the prescription in your lenses, you know, as your vision improves, if you have a high prescription, you need to reduce the prescriptions in your glasses periodically. And there's websites you can go to and get glasses and lenses for your distance vision. EyeBuyDirect is one of them, and ZenniOptical.com is another one. So there's eyebrightdirect.com and zennioptical.com. You can really get some nice glasses and lenses made. They are reasonably priced, and there are things you can do for it. And like I said, people are getting more and more nearsighted. Your prescriptions are getting higher and higher. You're more prone to having floaters and to having detached retinas. So it is good to do something about that. This premium can help you. Or if you get a chance, you can always give us a call at the office, and we can help you out.
I appreciate that.
Okay,
thank
so thank you for your call. Bye-bye now. And we'll give out all that connecting information before the end of the show, so people stand by with your pencils. So it's possible to get rid of floaters by changing your nutrition, are you saying, and doing these exercises? I suggest
right.
If the eyes start to drain, it would improve, or is it that the floaters reattach?
Well, you see, the vitreous jelly can reattach itself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're having problems with the eye being too dehydrated, the jelly's drying up and it's breaking off, well, when you rehydrate the eye better, you're rehydrating the vitreous jelly and those particles can reattach to it. That's how we do it.
All right. So we have another call coming in. Hello, you're on the air. Please turn off your radio. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I want to ask the doctor if the kit help go with glaucoma any.
Yeah, we work with glaucoma all the time. Do you wear reading glasses or bifocals or trifocals?
Well, I did wear reading glasses at one time, but not now.
So you can
be honest with you, I've been using those drugstore glasses.
All right. Well, they're reading glasses. Cheaters.
Okay, yeah.
How long have you been using them?
A couple of years, probably.
A few years now. Well, you might be having problems with blood flow to your eye. You know, I was saying that that can cause glaucoma. Also, using reading glasses for extended periods of time. And we do work with that. Do you have any optic nerve damage?
I think so, because I'm starting to lose vision, you know, my peripheral vision. When I look
down.
Have
you seen a doctor lately and had your eyes examined by an ophthalmologist?
Well, it's been about a couple of years ago. You know,
what was your eye pressure then? Do you remember?
I don't remember, but I was taking those drops. And I heard you say one time that those drops cause cataracts
to grow. Yeah, these eye drops they give you to lower the pressure can cause cataracts to grow. And your eye doctor, if you ask them, they should tell you that. If they don't, they're not giving you good information.
I stopped using it. I know it's probably pressure.
Well, then, if you're not using drops, your pressure might have gone up some, and that's not good.
Sure.
John, could you explain, based on what this caller presented, how he might be able to help himself based on whatever diet. And you were saying that, first of all, I want to say that John Monroe is not an MD. He is a natural vision educator and vision therapist, and he works with the research created by Dr. Banker. So there wouldn't be a misunderstanding, but you have been able to really help people with this information. So what would you recommend that is possible for our caller based on,
I've been working here now over 20 years every day doing this. So I picked up a lot of new things. In the past almost 10 years, I've been running the practice with me and my partner, Jeannie, who's a kinesiologist, and she used to work with Dr. Banker. So we, you know, there's a lot of experience in working with people. So I'm pretty good at it. And glaucoma, yes. He didn't tell me which type of glaucoma he has. There's different types of cataracts.
Are you still there, caller? No, I think we lost our caller.
I think he hung up. But open angle, closed angle, narrow angle glaucoma. There's different types of cataracts. You know, most people get a senile cataract or a nuclear cataract. There's Christmas tree cataracts. There's post-subcapsular cataracts. We work with all types of problems. But when your pressure is too high in your eye, the fluid in the eyes, it's like a balloon filling up with water, and it's not draining out, so it starts pushing on the optic nerve where it comes into the eye, and it can damage the nerve, the disc or cup of the nerve, you know, where it's coming into the eye. And that's a real hard one to work with. You know, we do have things we're doing for optic nerve damage. But the best thing is getting that pressure down. And a good normal pressure for your eye is 10 to 12. That's a really good pressure. 10 to 15 is good. Now, 15 to 20, that's kind of borderline. And people that have a high pressure of 20 or higher, it's going to cause optic nerve damage. And as it does that, you just start losing your visual field. You know, you start going blind from it. So that's why people need to pay attention to this stuff. And at least once a year, at the most, every 2 years, go have your eyes examined by an ophthalmologist. And he'll check your eye pressure. He checks for macular degeneration and other retinal problems. He checks for cataracts and... It's just good to do it, because when these problems start, you don't really feel it. You know, it can just kind of creep up on you.
And John, doesn't it make sense that if you have one of these conditions, you go to the ophthalmologist and they prescribe something, these eye drops or whatever, that a person could be doing these exercises and improving these conditions so that they can safely remove themselves rather than making a flat-out choice without having any other options?
Right. I couldn't believe it when I found out these drops that you're using to lower your pressure cause cataracts to grow.
Yeah, that's
so, it's amazing how these things work, but that's why Dr. Banker did what she did. She saw these problems, and she stopped doing cataract surgery because there was too many bad side effects. and she just decided to work on finding out what's causing these problems and how to reverse it, because just too many people in this country are having eye problems. I mean, there must be 15 million people in the United States that have macular degeneration alone.
Mm-hmm.
And glasses, or she said it's an epidemic over here. Over 50% of the people in this country are having eye problems and wearing glasses, and she said that's all they're giving everybody. And that was the whole deal, you know. And a lot of doctors supported Dr. Banker's work, and then there's people out there that don't want people to know about this stuff.
Right. We have another call coming in. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you doing today, Kathy?
Good, thank you.
And hi to the doctor. Let me say what I'm saying to the doctor. Okay, I got a little problem where I use a cell phone and it turns my eye red. And then I check it out like 3 different times and I find it's the cell phone. So I start to hold the cell phone a little distant from my eye, from my ears. And what happened, it doesn't turn it red again. But then I got 2 little things like mosquitoes that I see when I turn my eyes.
Yeah, those are floaters you're having. But the see, cell phones, they use microwaves. And I guess your eyes being sensitive to the microwaves, they can also, they say they can cause brain tumors. And you can always get a microphone or a head, you know, an earplug, and you don't have to hold the phone right up next to your ear. And it's good to use the cell phone for something important, you know, if you can use a landline or, you know, I see people all the time just yakking away on the cell phone. They got it right there next to their ear. But this is the first time I've heard of someone having an eye problem from using a cell phone. And I guess
I prove it because I do it, and when my eyes clear up, I use phone again for about 15 minutes at my head, and the same thing happened like 3 different times.
Right.
And I feel, like, you know, when you do welding and you feel those little spots in your eyes, you turn red, and I feel those little hitches just the same way.
Wow.
Well,
you're sensitive to the microwaves and whatever else is coming out of that telephone.
Yeah.
So
I would
be careful with that.
Okay, so that was good information.
Yeah, that was amazing there.
Yeah, and I think people, it really does illustrate just how sensitive our health can be and how sensitive our body can be. I want to remind folks that you are listening to Heart of Mind. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org. I'm Catherine Davis, and I'm speaking with John Monroe, who is a natural vision educator and vision therapist. And please make that phone call. We're into the second part of the program now, so I would love it if you could make that phone call while we are here engaged in sharing this information with you. The number to call is 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. Remember, you will get, as a result of your pledge of $100, the 4 eye charts, including the Big E chart, the near vision chart, and the nearsighted, farsighted. This is the exercise chart that really is there to empower you and help you to preserve your eyesight. You also receive 2 CDs, 1 CD by Dr. Banker. This is the doctor who created all this research, created these exercises, or at least assembled them all for you. And you'll receive her CD on eye exercise and nutrition with Deborah E. Banker. Plus, you're going to receive the information being shared on the program today from John Monroe. So, John, it would be great if you could start talking a little bit about nutrition. And
all
I
right.
know that you keep up on this. So you have lots of new studies and new information, but really begin to explain to people the connection between nutrition and their eyesight.
And just before I do that, I want to give out our website. It's drbanker.com, drbanker.com. That's drbanker.com. We also have a YouTube channel. You just put in Dr. Deborah E. Banker, and it'll go to our channel. We have some things up there you can watch. And the office phone number here in Boulder, Colorado is 303-494-4532. And you can reach me Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. in the morning to 7 p.m. at night, Mountain Time. You're 2 hours ahead of me there. 303-494-4532. And the premium we're offering is the Dr. Banker John Monroe Vision Improvement and Nutrition Set. So when you call in, make sure you ask for that, the Dr. Banker Vision Improvement Set. And as far as nutrition goes for the eye, it's really important, the things that you're eating and doing. There's a lot of things that affect eyesight, even sunlight, too much exposure to sun, radiation and glare from computer screens. Just like the other caller was